Welcome to our Christmas Eve service, Calvary family, and a special welcome to those of you who are visiting with us tonight. We're so glad that you're here with us. If you came this year because you came last year and there was a whole original musical and you're wondering where that is right now, sorry about that. That's not an every year thing for us. We don't pop out a fresh musical every Christmas. Maybe someday, but not this day. Tonight, we're going to have a much more peaceful Christmas Eve. In fact, that's the gift that we have in Jesus that we're going to look at tonight. If you were here on Sunday, you'll remember we took the time to quickly unpack 14 gifts that we have from God when we trust in Jesus. We got all of them from Luke chapter 1, where Zechariah lists out all of these wonderful things about Jesus. Redemption, salvation, forgiveness of sins. God keeps his promises. He gives us mercy. He fulfills all the prophecies about Jesus that were written hundreds of years before his birth. And that's just some of them. We unpacked 14 gifts, but when we got to that 15th gift, I said that we would wait on that one until tonight. And here we are. There are two kinds of people in this world. There are those who always do the best thing first, and there are those who save the best for last. I am a save the best for last kind of person, always saving the best for last. So, for example, if I have a plate of delicious food in front of me, but there is also a kale salad, I will power through that kale salad at the fastest speed acceptable to those I am eating with. Okay, so if I'm with friends, I'm going to go normal speed. If I'm with just my family at home, it's going to be a little quicker than that. And if I'm by myself, well, let's be honest, there's probably no kale involved at all at that point. I have an aunt who, when I was a child, tried to convince me that if I would eat the best thing first, I'd always have the best thing remaining. Did you follow that logic? That makes sense. It makes sense to me. I could follow the logic too. It is not convincing, however. That is not how I'm built. The way I'm built is I'm going to power through the stuff I want less so that I can slow down and savor the thing that I want most. Well, in a sense, what we're doing tonight is slowing down and savoring the thing that people, all people, want most. Some people want it from God. Some people want it just any way they can get it. And that thing is peace. Peace in your mind and in your heart. Peace in your home. Peace among your family members. Peace on the world stage as wars are raging in Ukraine and Israel and Ethiopia, among other places. U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported their numbers for the past few years, and the numbers of people reporting symptoms of anxiety and depression are way up. They are way, way up, particularly among young adults between the ages of 18 and 29. Now, the numbers are up across the board. The numbers are up for everyone, but it is particularly affecting young adults. If you have these chaotic and doubtful thoughts wrestling around in your mind and in your heart, you know that it does not help for someone to just come along and say to you, well, cheer up. Stop worrying so much. That doesn't work. And that's because your inner conflicts, they match up with conflict and chaos that's around you. Wars and family conflicts and tensions at work and job loss and parenting stress, and sickness. These are anxiety-inducing things. You can't just look at those things and say, well, don't worry about it and expect that worry is going to go away. The lack of peace inside of us matches up with the lack of peace outside of us. What we want is a peace that's sourced in reality. Isn't that what we want? We want peace, but we want it to be sourced in what's real. We want peace that calms our hearts and minds, truly does that. That settles conflicts, actual conflicts in our families, that turns enemies into friends, and that brings about real change. That's the peace we're longing for. We want actual peace. But where do you find that? I mean, where do you find that kind of peace? Some people are skeptical that it can be found at all, and so they simply embrace the brokenness and they settle into a life of coping or distraction. Some try to find it through discipline, mindfulness. Mindfulness is a kind of intense meditation to relax your body and your mind. Some try to find it through advocacy, right? They throw themselves into a cause that they believe in. They throw their hours, their time, their energy behind a cause. They want to be the change they want to see in the world. And from a worldly perspective, from just a human perspective, just interacting with people on earth, I get it. The lack of peace in this world is real. The unpeacefulness is real, and people are going to do something about it. But the only peace that can truly calm our minds, right, that can truly calm them, would have to be, I think you'll agree with me, it would have to be a peace that addresses the true cause of conflict and chaos. And I want to spend some time looking at that peace tonight. You know, I can't help but note the broad correlation of two trends that we see here in the United States: the increase in anxiety and depression, and the decrease of commitment to following Jesus, primarily among young people, young adults. That stands out to me because of who Jesus is, and what Jesus taught, and what Jesus has given to every person who trusts in him. And let me tell you, if you're in that 18 to 30 range, and you're here tonight because you're visiting family, and family came, and so you came too, but you've largely moved beyond the faith of your youth. If that's you, I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you tonight. What have you found? What have you found out there? You released yourself from Jesus and from the authority of the Bible, and perhaps most importantly in your mind, from the church. What have you found? What's out there? True joy, hope, peace? Found that? The numbers don't back up that. The medication numbers are even more telling in that regard. I want to challenge you tonight that what you have pushed away, ironically, left you without the very thing you long for most. When we have Jesus, we have a peace that our hearts long for most. We're going to see this peace in both where Jesus guides us and the gift Jesus gives to us. So let's start with where Jesus guides us. This is the last gift that's listed by Zechariah that he mentions. He says, "The sunrise shall visit us from on high to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace." Do you like escape rooms? You know those escape rooms they have? Do you like those escape rooms? I've never had the opportunity to do one with those really sort of fancy professional escape rooms. Though, as I mentioned to my family just the other day, every room is an escape room if you're trying to leave it. That's about how well it did at my house, too, actually. That joke. Being a comic genius is hard, right, dads? It's really tough. I think I'd really like it. I think I would enjoy what an escape room is, because I like solving the mystery. I like figuring out the path, solving the problem, finding the path. The room is designed, and it's designed in such a way as it has one way out. In a sense, humanity's rejection of God and fall into sin has put us all into an escape room. There's a door, there's a hidden key, and there's a universal sense among all of us that there must be some kind of way out of here, according to Bob Dylan, right? Zechariah is saying that our world is locked down. That's what he's describing here. It's locked down in the darkness of our sin, and we are sitting in the shadow of death that's looming over us. We can't see our way out of this. But the locked, dark room of our world has one way out. And Zechariah says the key has just arrived. In the darkness of our violence and chaos and brokenness, driven by our God-rejecting and God-ignoring hearts, the light has been turned on. It's brightened the room. God himself has taken on flesh, and he's been born into his own creation to lead us out of our conflict and into peace. See, all of our efforts to make peace with methods and discipline, advocacy, even legislation, the reason that these don't create permanent peace on earth is that they are human solutions crafted in the dark. That's what they are. They're well-meaning guesses, really, and typically only deal with symptoms of the real problem. The real problem is that we're at war with God because of our sin, and that war has spread to our relationships with other people and our own selves and to the rest of creation. It doesn't matter how often you practice deep breathing or how many hours you give to the cause. If you haven't found peace with God through a relationship with Jesus Christ, you're not going to find it anywhere else. See, the way of peace is first with God himself. Do you see where he says that? The way of peace? The first step in that way is to have peace with God himself. That's what Zechariah is saying earlier in the passage. We didn't read that tonight, but if you look earlier in the passage, you'll see that he describes Jesus as the one who brings redemption and salvation through God's forgiveness. So if you want to experience real peace, and I know that we all do, it's a longing in everybody's heart. If you want to experience real peace, the first conflict that has to end is the one between you and God. And that means God has to forgive you. He has to forgive you. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 16, the Apostle Paul says that when Jesus died on the cross and he bore the consequences of our sin, that act reconciles. It's the word he uses. It's a relationship word. It reconciles us to God. The cross is a peacemaking act. It's God ending the conflict between us. With no more sin standing between us and God, we are reunited with him. We have peace with God through Jesus. That's why he came. That's why we're celebrating Christmas, because we have peace with God through Christ. Now, here's a question. How do you know if this applies to you? How do you know if God forgives you? It's a pretty important question with a very simple answer. Have you asked him to forgive you? Have you asked him to? And I don't mean just sort of the trite, you know, I'm real sorry about that kind of thing that we give to one another. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, have you acknowledged the truth of the hostility that you have against God, that you express through your sin? Have you turned from that sin? Have you trusted in Jesus' peacemaking work on the cross? And have you given him your life? That's what I'm asking. And if the answer to that question is yes, well, then yeah, God forgives you. He absolutely forgives you. Even if you don't always feel that way. Even if sometimes you struggle with doubt. Even if you don't always feel peaceful, you can be sure that God is at peace with you if you are trusting in Jesus. And let me tell you, that is not the only assurance. There is even more assurance than that. See, when you've had that peace with God, when you experience that peace with God, what you find is it tends to start to spread to all the other parts of your life. And there's a reason that happens. Jesus tells us the reason that peace begins to spread. This is Jesus. I'm going to show you something. This is Jesus talking to his disciples just before he died and rose again. Okay, this is from John chapter 14. These things I have spoken to you while I am still with you. But the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Peace, Jesus says, is what I'm going to leave behind with you. When I was in college, I would go home on breaks to spend holidays with my family and go to those incredible holiday meals. Some of you might be home from college doing that very same thing this week. We would eat. We'd have this wonderful banquet. And then once we were done eating, my mom would break out disposable storage containers that she had bought just for this occasion, just for the purpose of filling them up with leftovers and sending them home with my brother and me. So she'd fill them up, she'd pack it up, and we would take it out. And I can see that some of you are excited about that. You already done the same thing. And some of you college students were like, yes, it's amazing. She'd send us home with the leftovers because she knew my fridge had exactly one package of Hot Pockets, one handful of ketchup, and space. That was it, right? And so I'd take this food and I would go home. She'd send us home loaded with turkey, stuffing, pumpkin pie, which from her perspective was quite a sacrifice because who doesn't love raiding the fridge after a holiday meal and going in and eating more of it? But I want you to look at this from my perspective, okay? I want you to look at this moment from how I would have seen it. I show up with what? Hunger. That's it. I show up hungry. No one wants a Hot Pocket. Ketchup packets, unnecessary for anything being served. I come in empty-handed. I contribute nothing to this except my sparkling personality. And I eat a banquet that has been prepared for me. I didn't even cook. I didn't even help. It was prepared for me. And when I'm done, I am fully satisfied. And then my parents, because they love me, and because they know I'm going to need it later, send me home with more of the same. Jesus came and he secured peace between us and God. He fully satisfies. He fully satisfies. We contribute nothing to that peace other than our own hunger for it and our need for it. That's all we bring to the table. But then, because he loves us, and because he knows we're going to need it later, he sends us into the world with more of the same. More of the same peace. Peace I leave behind with you. Peace I give to you. You're going to need this later. You're going to need to experience the calming peace of God in this rough world. You're going to need to bring this to others. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. The implication there is that those who have Jesus are going to be helping other people find that peace. We're going to be helping other people see and experience peace because they're going to be living turbulent lives that need Jesus. We're going to be working to reconcile people. We are going to encounter people who are spinning out of control. Maybe that's how you feel tonight. That life is, in some sense, just spinning out of control. And we're going to encounter folks that need that. And we're going to be there to help. So Jesus says to his disciples, when I am not physically here anymore, don't worry. Don't worry. It'll be okay. Because the Helper, the Holy Spirit, is going to be with you. And he's going to bring to mind everything that I taught you. And this peace, God's peace, it's not like the peace that's offered in the world. See, worldly peace is about addressing symptoms and emotions. It's designed to get you to feel a bit happier about the problem that's right in front of you and work around it. It appeals to sentiment. It says things like, let's all just be happier, let's do better, let's treat each other more lovingly, let's forgive and move on. But it never touches on the root problem. But the peace of Christ says, I have fully satisfied the root of hostility. That is gone. And I'm going to give you the Holy Spirit who will be with you every place you go. And he's going to keep reminding you of that peace. He's going to keep pointing you back to that peace. Friends, I want you to have a peaceful Christmas. But I want you to have a truly peaceful one. In a moment, we're going to sing Silent Night. And we're going to light our candles, our Christmas candles, because it's a great tradition here at Calvary and seemingly every church I've ever heard of. Everybody does this. And it's because of it's so popular for a reason. It's not just because it's beautiful and calm and a lovely way to celebrate Christmas. It is all those things, but it's also because of what it symbolizes. Jesus, the light, casting out the darkness. And just for tonight, maybe just for this Christmas, I'd like to add just a little bit to the symbolism of that. Tonight, as the flames spread and the candlelight fills the room, and we sing the words, sleep in heavenly peace, I'd like you to remember the gift of the peace that God has given us in the Holy Spirit. You know, in Acts chapter 2, when the Holy Spirit first comes to Jesus' disciples, they describe that experience of the Spirit coming down as like flames of fire falling down on them. God has left his peace behind to comfort us as the Holy Spirit brings to mind all that Jesus has done and taught in this world. And now, to a pretty chaotic world that we live in, we are called to be beacons of peace, pointing the way to Jesus. If you're among the many here tonight, I'm sure, the many here tonight, who know about Jesus, but you don't know Jesus, and you haven't experienced the peace of resting confidently in Jesus, I invite you, in the quietness of your heart, to reach out and take hold of that forgiveness. Reach out and take hold of it. To acknowledge that you need it. You can't make the chaos of your life more peaceful. You can't. You can't do it on your own. Take hold of the peace of Christ and let him lead you out of it. Would you pray with me?